Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Yeah, welcome back. Dermot in for Oliver today. And James Fahey was 19 years old when he had a great idea. He wanted to leave a tip in a coffee shop, but he'd no cash. See? Nice man. It got James thinking, though, how tipping could work in what was becoming an increasingly cashless society. So he contacted his friend Kira Walsh, and Just Tip was born. I know there's a lot of Tipperary fans getting very excited, but it's nothing to do with you for once. And it set them on a career path they never want to leave. They are here to tell us about this great success, Just Tip. James is here in studio. Kira's on the line from their London office, and you're both very welcome.
Thank you.
Are you there, Kira?
Can you? Thanks for having us.
Yeah, pleasure. I notice you're over in London doing the real work while James is sitting here at
exactly,
home.
Exactly, yeah.
What kind of work are you doing in London right now, Kira?
We're building the team over here and we're focused on growth over here. So I kind of run the sales and marketing department. So that's where I'm at the moment, unless you want a full day's breakdown.
Well, James, tell us how you guys met. How do you know each other?
Oh, we're friends years and years. So it goes all the way back to secondary school. I guess myself and Kira were kind of in friend groups that would have been crossovers and whatever else. So yeah, we've just kind of been friends for a very long time at this stage. And I guess that's where this whole story unfolded, because she had worked in hospitality and I hadn't, so it was kind of a nice mix that I guess evidently cascaded to where we are now.
Most people might have an idea, you know, go, oh, I wonder is there a way of doing that, and then they just walk out of the cafe and get on with their lives. What is it about you that makes you follow through on these kinds of ideas at age 19, you know, to embark on this journey? What is it about you, do you think?
Oh, I'm just incredibly annoying, like, I think. But if you ask my mother anyway, that's probably my best personality trait.
Tenacious, I would say.
Yeah,
I agree. That's the nice way of putting it, yeah.
And what did you think, Kira, when you got the call? You know, did you think, oh, this is just sort of some random thought from James's head? Or what made you think, actually, there's something in this?
James was born to be an entrepreneur. He's always telling me about his ideas. But as someone who worked in hospitality, when he pitched me this one, I don't know. I thought there was a need for it in the market, and I never thought we would get to where we are now, but here we are anyway. And yeah, the opportunity just seemed too big to miss out. So I embarked on it with him.
Well, having worked in hospitality, tell us about how the tipping system generally worked. I know we all have an awareness that it's a sort of a vague grey area, and sometimes we might, you know, grab the waiter or waitress's hand, you know, before they walk away, and we go, now, are you going to get these tips yourself, or is it going to the big bad boss? You know, so there's an awareness, I think, generally that it's a little bit hazy, the whole system. So what was your experience with it?
I think, honestly, in Ireland anyway, business owners are great at giving tips to their staff. They want to give tips to their staff. It was just mostly a cash-based system, and then obviously COVID happened, and then new legislation came in that also made that difficult. So where we kind of are now is slightly different to where we were when I was working in hospitality. There's a lot more transparency and a lot more card tips going through. I'll let James tell you a bit about the legislation in a second. But yeah, to be honest, a lot of it was just cash in hand before COVID. And now we're trying to, that's what we do. We're navigating the tipping space post-COVID and making sure everyone still gets their tips.
Yeah, we'll get on to kind of the technology that you're using in a second. But is it right that neither of you got to sit your leave insert?
Yeah, we were the infamous COVID class.
So this, yeah, we were that year.
This started it was around October time 2020. So we just got our results around August. We didn't know we were in college just yet.
So this was the predicted grades that sends a shiver down all our spines.
Exactly, yeah. Sitting, waiting, listening to, I think it was Norma Foley tell us whether the leave insert was happening this week or not, or any of that sort of stuff. And then COVID on top of it.
Yeah. Was that a completely mad time?
Yeah,
it was was a mental time. I actually, I remember it well because I got my first dog because my mom felt so bad for me waiting to see if I was going to sit the leaving cert or not.
Here, you've no future and you can't buy a home, but here's a dog.
Yeah.
It was a mad time. I was only sitting, waiting to come in here, and again, sanitizing station was sitting there in front of me on the wall, and I was just thinking to myself, Jesus, it feels like a very short period of time since COVID, but a very, very long period of time as well.
Mm. And James, you obviously had an entrepreneurial spirit. Were you running little companies and things while you were in school, or how was that manifesting?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm working since I was young, kind of 14, 15, 16. I think, yeah, there was no real businesses or whatever else. I have always tried to work as hard as I can, and then I've worked for people who maybe I feel I could do it better. And I guess I said, you know what, we'll give it a go. When you're 19, you know, everyone thinks that it's low risk or whatever else. Like, quite frankly, you know, I was just an idiot, like, and decided to go down this route.
Yeah, well, you didn't have any direct experience of scaling up a business and getting investment and all that kind of thing. So you have this idea, Kira's on board, okay, let's try it. And then you start to embark on it. So what was the next step?
So this all journey, so we've raised quite a bit of money at this stage. We've raised about nearly 3 million.
Where did the first money come from?
So yeah, that's where I was coming to. So Kira's parents, my parents, like, we started us with 10 grand. That was the starting point. And that was to build out a very shaky piece of technology, which I guess we've built on, you know, they call it an MVP, minimal viable product. But we literally started with 10 grand and just literally banging on doors.
Right. So mum and dad coughed up the start to get you going.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fantastic. And then you got to go out and start, you know, you have the idea and you're trying to sell it to people. So are you walking door to door in cafes saying, here, do you want to be interested in a new system that's a little bit fairer to your staff, etc.?
Yeah, just back to that funding piece. So there was, the deal was, if after a year this looked like it was going to go under, we had to go back to college and we had to figure it all out. So that was always in the back of the mind. And I guess the parents were just trying to maybe shut me up a small bit and just trying to, you know, just give it a go and see what happens. But yeah, honestly, we built the tech. We started building it, and then there was other providers that launched in the interim. So there was another company. And
well, that's always the fear, isn't it? You have this great idea, you start to get behind it, you start putting money into it, and then you hear, oh God, somebody's beat us to it.
So I think that was actually, look, like everything, there's no such thing as a knockback, really. We wanted to go down the route of doing online tipping, so you could leave a scan a QR code or click a link and pay.
So is it a little device that sits on the countertop?
Yeah, and I think that was the piece. So that company launched. We stood back and said, right, we're trying to rush this now. We need to slow down for a minute. I'm very impatient, but we decided to slow down for a week. We found this tipping terminal that we wanted to use, brought it down to my nanny and granddad, and I said, come here, what to and do with that? And like, there was a bit of to and froing around what a bank card does and whatever else, but they managed to understand you tap your card. I think that is when I knew I had something. Rather than scanning QR codes. And again, the demographic that we want to chase are not the people who are my age, 22, 23, 24. We want to chase people who are your age, people who have
the
money.
The big tippers.
The people who have money.
I don't know, you've obviously never got out to lunch with me. Okay, so people might have even seen these around. So they're like a separate little tap sensor, and that it just goes, leave your tip and you go boop and it's done.
So that was the starting point. Yeah, so we have, there's about 700-800 sites currently using us. We have about 15 or 16,000 employees that get paid off us weekly across the EU and the UK. So we started there, and I guess where we're at today is completely different, as Kira kind of said. So we've now, will I jump ahead and go straight into what we're doing?
Well, maybe Kira, what's in it for the business? I mean, is it more tax efficient? Does it help their admin, their headaches separating tips out? Like, what's in it for the business?
Yeah, of course. It's much more tax efficient for the business, but also under new legislation, we basically bring them in compliance with this new legislation, so they don't have to worry about that. And it also removes admin. So we kind of say it as a three benefits for the business. So compliance, automation, and tax savings. So the automation takes a few hours a month out of the business from, you know, counting up all the tips, writing down who should get what, all of that stuff. We completely automate that side of it. And the tax savings, so we save them the 11.8% PRSI on all tips through their system. And then The compliance bit is basically bringing the business in line with the legislation, so they don't have to worry about the WRC coming in and asking, oh, let me see all your tips. We can do that all for them.
Mm. And I mean, two of you, with all the enthusiasm and knowledge that you have from different areas, running your own business, doing a startup, getting funding, all that. I mean, there's got to be things that went wrong in the early days, were there?
Yeah, where, how long have you got?
Well, to be, I'd say about 4 minutes. So,
yeah, look, we've probably made every mistake under the sun you can possibly make as a startup. Mm. I go to these talks and fireside chats and they're all like, oh, in the first 5 years we did this. And I'm like, that was 3 months, mate. I got it all done early. Yeah, look, I think we've made so many mistakes that it's gone full circle now. Where
what kind of mistakes do you make? What are the classic potholes?
You look for shortcuts. I think it's probably the easiest way to put it. You try bring on people who you think are going to, you know, bring you to the moon, and you try, you find investors who are going to go in and continuously invest and whatever else. And again, I've got an amazing set of investors, but it's there's no shortcuts in this. There's no easy way to start a company. It's hard slog. It's hard work. And I think that's probably the piece that every first-time founder makes. They find a person or a thing, and that is the, oh, that'll just bring us now to 10 million worth of revenue. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen.
Yeah, I also think that, like, learning that most of your job as a founder is just putting out fires and fixing problems 90% of the time, and then making sure you have the time to go and grow it as well.
Is it fun?
Yes.
Sometimes.
There was a telling gap there. I'd say every business owner can relate to. Every self-employed person is now, you know, whether they're sitting in a van or sitting behind a laptop going, I get it, lads. Putting out fires, dealing with staff.
Yeah.
You know.
There's days in the sun. That's how we look at it. There's days in the rain. You spend most of your life in thirds. That's how we look at it. A third of your life is utter crap. A third of your life is in the middle, and a third of your life is success. I think as a founder, it's probably a bit less than the success part, because as you say, anyone in a van or listening, you know, the higher up you go in a company or whatever else, the less people who can solve your problems, and I guess the more stuff that gets pushed up to you. So we're the last line of defense when it comes to issues, and that's, look, it's just life, isn't it?
And
he did a great job, though, even though James made
really selling the kids.
Follow your dreams, lads.
Keep going.
But it is. I mean, you got to be the type of person who has that fire in the belly and thrives on the stress without letting the stress wash over them so much that they, you know, they feel like they're drowning.
Yeah. Without a breakdown.
Well, you have to have a few of them just to kind of keep the level right,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Once a week, baby.
So what's it like then? You've been in London over there. Obviously, you're branching out into the UK market and probably beyond. What's the vision? What's the dream? What's on the PowerPoint slides in the office?
Which PowerPoint? So Kira has said it earlier on. So we started off with those tipping machines and coffee shops. And now, so we now are a platform that embeds ourselves into banks. And what that means is, where there's no longer two transactions. Whenever you leave a payment, for example, in Marco Pierre White, we sit in behind that card machine. So when you leave a tip, it's one payment, one tip, one transaction, but the payment is split. So we've now embedded ourselves fully into MyPos. It's a bank that has 300,000 customers across Europe and is our first step into, I guess, the next generation of our product. So there's a few more banks now lining up, I guess, to do the same piece of technology we've done with that. But, you know, it's been 5 years of just slog. Yeah.
Was there resistance, James, when you were going around looking for funding because of your age?
Oh, yeah, of course there was.
Did they think?
That's why we raised in such part and parcel. And I guess the more mature the company got, and I guess the longer we didn't fail, people started to listen.
Well, isn't it funny? Because the success stories that make the news are, oh, my God, these young entrepreneurs are really doing it. But actually, that goes against you when you're trying to become the young entrepreneur that gets you on the radio show, you know, and makes your business a success and all that stuff.
It's hard work. Like, I think you look at Instagram and you think, you know, it's so easy. Let's start a business that does a million worth of recurring revenue. And I think what happens continuously is everyone reads the news and sees one article which has a founder who raised 1.5 million or whatever it is. And look, fair play to them. They're the ones that managed to get the break.
Mm.
The rest of us are just trying to work our ass off.
Akira, you've just moved to London. So it's actually this week, was it?
Yeah, I flew over on Saturday and I actually only got to the place I'm living last night because I've been in Leeds and Liverpool all week. So yeah, I got into the flat and no duvet, no pillows, nothing, just a flat bed.
How are the housemates?
I actually haven't properly met them, so it was a lockbox for me last night because I got in quite late.
Okay, so you haven't met them yet. Hopefully they just have two legs and they're not four-legged housemates that are crawling around under skirting boards and things.
God, I thought you were talking about a dog there. I was like, I love that.
That's heaven. Kira chose the best week to go to London as well. This is typical Kira Walsh.
Yeah, all the strikes.
Tube strikes.
All the strikes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Walking 20 kilometres to go everywhere.
And beyond...
Yeah, I had to carry 50 kg across London. I walked it like it was chronic.
Well, it's sometimes we sort of delight in hearing about traffic chaos and somewhere that isn't home.
Kira's training for World's Strongest Woman, like.
And beyond this, do you have ideas for other products?
Yeah, of course I do. This MyPause piece is going to unlock quite a bit for us, and I guess we're really excited about that. And then, you know, we're launching the Spanish market before the end of the year. We're already in the UK, so bigger contracts being announced there. So yeah, like I think overarching, we're raising more funding in the next couple of months. We're growing the team out. We're expanding into Europe. There's opportunities in America. So it's, it's continuous.
Well, look, exciting. In the meantime, use some of that funding to send over some Barry's tea bags over to
and some tatoes
over to London to keep you sane. Or actually, no, forget that. Just send her a duvet cover and a pillowcase. That'll be great.
Yeah.
Guys, it's been really nice to meet you. Kira Walsh and James Fahey. The company is Just Tip. And what's the website people can find you on?
JustTip.net.
JustTip.net. Continued success. Thanks for chatting to us today.
Thank you.
It's Dermot Whelan in for Oliver today. Lots of your messages coming in. Tipping in a cafe where they're just handing you a cup over the counter? No thanks. Leave that in the US, says a disgruntled Dan. One of my first jobs was working in an insomnia, actually. And yes, I am a trained barista. My cappuccino art wouldn't be the best, but I can do it. But you know what, Dan, considering the types of people that you have to deal with on the other side of the counter all day long, I don't think there's anything wrong with getting a few pence into the cup. And someone says, Just Tip is a fantastic system. As a non-cash user myself, I love it. Well done to your two guests for inventing it. Exactly. Well done. Great to see them going to such lengths and learning new skills and being a success. It was great to have them in. 5-1.